Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Inquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily, all with the sidecar of sarcasm you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble! Feel the fires into the rear!
He'll gun it deep downfield for A.J. Green. A.J.'s got it! Touchdown! Bengals! Dalton in the shotgun, two receivers left, two to the right. Andy straight back to throw. Fires for Gresham in the end zone! Touchdown! Bengals! And Reedy burst up the middle of the field. Look out! Reedy's off to the races.
Let's get ready to rumble!
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. Fresh off a trip to Cleveland and back, we have survived the great city on the lake, and Joe has survived his hometown. Joe Reedy, Bengals beat writer, of course, myself, Paul Daner Jr. Joe, how are you?
Doing good, Paul. How are you doing?
You know, I'm hanging in there as we returned to a city after the Browns 17-6 win over the Bengals and the Reds weekend debacle against the Pirates. We're, of course, recording this on Monday night, so still no knowledge of what will happen during Tuesday's playoff game. But clearly a city that is in a very bad sports way. This has to be one of the worst sports weekends that this town has seen in a long time as far as the combination of Reds and Bengals. It takes me back to, 2010? The Tampa Bay debacle, which played then directly into the Reds' elimination of the playoffs on that one Sunday. I mean, just epically bad.
Paul, I'm from Cleveland. I've seen worse sports weekends than this. The Achilles Smith throat slash and then the Indians getting pounded against the Red Sox. I mean, I've seen some bad weekends. This was a minor scratch compared to some of the carnage I've seen over the years.
Or really any weekend that has a name to it, you know, with the drive, the catch. I don't mean to go there on you. I know.
Was that the drive, at the fumble, at the shot?
There's too many really to count, but as far as the combo, it was pretty bad. So we return to Cincinnati, and after we drive in the wee hours on Sunday night, we both managed to survive the middle of nowhere.
I don't know about you, but I enjoyed the Red Bull Blueberry or the Raspberry or whatever they got. You seem like a cranberry Red Bull guy to me.
I'm an original. I go original Red Bull Classic. I don't try to put too many flavors in. Again, went with the coffee Red Bull double whammy. But it still wasn't enough. It was 9 o'clock before I left. You were even later there than me at.
I think
Brown
I left
Stadium.
About 9:30 because I had to do the Cine Sports shoot. Yep. Hung out with some of the Browns beat writers still in the press box. The Browns PR staff talked with them for a couple minutes. All credit to the Browns PR staff.
Yes.
This year. We petitioned for better parking, which I got. And since with parking,
your
it
clout.
Is all about me.
It is all about you.
But the pregame food.
Pregame meal was all about everyone. Joe, you put it out there. You made it happen. And what we saw, the chicken marsala for pregame meal.
Did you try the tortellini? I'm not a big cheese guy.
I didn't go tortellini. I thought about it, but the marsala was so fantastic. A nice little salad. You know, they even had the stadium brats with the stadium mustard.
Yes.
They had it all. They had the halftime food. They had plenty of cookies. Afterwards, they rolled out the wraps.
The chicken wraps were very good.
That was huge. For people that like to tap late into the evening, that was huge to get us through the end of that game, and so we could total everything up. But it was a late
The little
late
kettle
night.
Chips, too.
I like the kettle chips.
Yes, the kettle chips and the wrap, very, very nice touch.
Well thought out, not too unhealthy, you know, help us watch our girlish figures. It was one of those, though, where the late night drive back was not too – at one point, I stopped at a BP in the middle of nowhere – where not it was so closed down that they had garage doors that encompassed the entire BP main area that they had pulled down. There, it was the only thing off the exit. I mean, nothing but what I assume was just where the bodies are buried out in the back in the middle of the night. I was so tired just trying to get the blood pumping. I think I did a lap around that thing, and then just I think I was too scared for my life to continue circling the building. I got in my car.
Oh, come on. It's just outside of Columbus. What happens outside of Columbus?
This was in that weird area between Columbus, on that stretch between Columbus and Cincinnati, where it gets pretty creepy. It's not quite Deliverance territory like I've seen some places, but there's not a lot of good things happening out there.
But I do like exit 97 on I-71, the little Circle K and Wendy's Tim Hortons combo. Little Tim Hortons coffee.
Give options to the driver. Absolutely.
Usually when I'm on road trips with the dog, bringing her up or back, stop at Tim Hortons, get some tea and a couple donuts, and they give her one of those little Timbits, so she's always happy.
Wow. Any place that takes care of your dog is always going to get your business.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Now, a big fan of the tidbits is the dog. I mean, yes. The dog probably goes nuts for that stuff.
Oh, she loves the tidbits.
So when you arrive back here after the weekend that was had, and the way the Bengals played, and the way everyone is calling to fire Jay Gruden, Marvin Lewis, Andy Dalton, pretty much anybody responsible for whoever drove the bus to Cleveland, everyone fired for this offensive debacle. I think there's a song that we need to really play for anyone listening to this podcast to let them know to relax, to calm down. We're going to have to go 90s for that.
Really?
But everyone I know has got a reason to say, put the past away.
Third Eye Blind. Did you ever listen to Third Eye Blind? Even when they were in their heyday there.
Did they do that?
They probably did. I feel like all those, they all sound the same. Every band from that in that like mid to late 90s rock pop sounds exactly the same to me. But that was just remember to step back from the ledge. Everyone step back from the ledge. And it's gonna be okay. No need. It's week four, people.
Have you ever seen the movie Jumper, though, Paul?
I haven't seen the movie Jumper
with Hayden Christensen.
No.
Interesting, strange movie. I think Samuel L. Jackson was in it too. Not one of Samuel's better films.
I feel like you can say Samuel L. Jackson was in anything. Him and Kevin Bacon. I mean, you can pretty much throw them out there, and they'll be in just about every single movie.
That's true. But interesting Saturday night in Cleveland.
Yes. Oh, we've got to break out the King of the Road rankings.
Yeah. Oh.
Because for those of you that follow the podcast, every road trip we take whatever our Saturday night eat was, whether both of us were there or not, and we're not going to bring that up because maybe the only time Joe and I have gotten into a fight on this podcast before.
See, I waited for you in Cleveland.
You did. You did wait for me. The team was staying out in Beachwood, but you waited as I had to come back from the Reds game on Saturday. I was working, and waited for me. And
Our sensibility said we were staying in downtown Cleveland, though.
Yes, and a huge pull for you. And the Marriott points right in the middle of downtown, few blocks from everything, right across from the casino. We ended up at this place called the Barley House.
Yes.
It was a very nice establishment. You were waiting for me at the bar when I got there. We sit down. Eventually, big Ohio State game was going on at that time. So we saddle in there and watch the game. Every TV has the game on. They're playing the fight song at the commercials.
Well, hang on, Sloopy.
Oh, everything is all about Ohio State. Where, you know, it's about the late third, early fourth quarter, and a guy comes around and says, just so you guys know, in about 10 minutes, we're going to have to take your table and chairs from you because this is going to be a dance floor. Then I see him going around to the people at the bar saying he's got to take their chairs from them. The look on these people's faces as they're head to toe in scarlet and gray, freaking out over the end of that Wisconsin game was just pure disbelief. To which point, had to say to Barley House, know who you are.
Yes.
They had an identity crisis. You got to know who you are. They don't know who they are.
Which, you know, Paul, to me, the Barley House and the Bengals offense are one and the same.
They were.
They don't know who they are.
What do they want to be? The Bengals are the Barley House of the NFL.
Yes.
Figure out what you are. Figure out what you are. We'll get to that later. But first I want to say, so as we sat there, eventually the tables were not taken away from us. No, the game still played. But then about 10, when they said the tables would come away, was when this all of a sudden replaced the Ohio State game.
But I do. You don't get them girls loose. You don't get the world loose. You don't get money. But I do.
I think y'all having a good time out there.
Pitbull! The party never stops. The party never stops when Pitbull Techno comes on. And it just owned the night from that point forward.
You know, Paul, there's not many things where I'll go where I pray that Brett Musburger's voice gets replaced. But when you put Pitbull on, that's usually when you go,
yeah.
I don't know.
So the food was pretty good. I really enjoyed the food, but the not knowing who they are and taking your I feel like taking your table and chair from you at a restaurant is a fireable offense. I feel they go to the bottom of our King of the Road rankings.
I agree. But then we went to another more reputable establishment and watched the end of the game.
We did. We went to another place to catch the end of the game, ended up at the casino, had a great time there. So great. How great is it, Ohio, now with these casinos right in the middle of downtown? Go play a little blackjack. Enjoy yourself on the road.
Well, it was partly enjoyable, Paul. Good news, we made money. Bad news, we were playing with a guy who didn't know how to play blackjack.
But you know what? You've got to be a next-level blackjack player. It's not all about the cards and the numbers. Those take care of themselves. Someone has to be the mediator at that table and keep anybody who's too intoxicated to play properly in check. I felt like I played the role of mediator myself along with our lovely dealer to talk some sense into the guy and let him know that sometimes you've just got to sacrifice for the best of the table. And we kept him limiting his bad plays and kept us in the money. I feel like we really showed a lot of it. We reacted well to adversity there.
You know what, Paul? He seemed like a guy who had money and didn't want to lose money. And when you play like that, it's just not a good combination. When you're showing 13 and the dealer's showing a face card.
At least you're not bitter about this anymore, Joe.
It's just people that don't know how to play,
It's Saturday night at the Horseshoe in downtown Cleveland, and we ran into what you'll see there. But hey, end of the day, we both walk out up, smiles on our faces,
yep.
Happy night in Cleveland. The next day, there wasn't many people smiling around the people that we were hanging out with, unfortunately, because we had to go down to the Bengals locker room after that game. Moral of the story, offense, disaster. For all the things that had sort of gone wrong through the first couple of weeks, it all came together in just one of those disastrous Sundays for the Bengals. But before we get into our analysis of it, we want to bring you Jay Gruden. This is us Monday talking with Jay. I trimmed it down because it was another gusher. Trimmed it down to about 10 minutes of Jay Gruden talking about what the heck happened and his view on it, particularly a lot of good stuff defending Andy Dalton. So here we go. Here's Jay Gruden talking about what happened in Cleveland.
former quarterback yourself, can you empathize with a quarterback getting too much credit when it goes wrong, too much blame when it goes poorly?
It's part of the game, man. That's the position he signed up for, and that's something you have to accept with the position. And one of the most important traits you have to have as a quarterback, you have to be mentally tough when things don't go well and understand that you're going to get the blunt of the criticism when they don't go bad and, or when they don't go well, and you're going to get probably too much praise when they do go well. So he's a mentally tough kid, and we all know in this room that it wasn't all Andy Dalton. It was a lot of me. It was a lot of the backs. It was a lot of the tight ends, a lot of the line. We all had our hand in it, and something we just got to fight out of.
How much would you say was it? Mental or physical? Was it a case of guys not being on the same page with each other?
No, I don't know. There were some mental, obviously. There's some mental, there's some physical, there's some things that they did well. You know, we just didn't play very well, you know, in any phase, really. The running game, I think we were averaging about 3 yards a clip, 3.5 yards maybe, and we missed some throws that were open. We got covered when we had routes called that should have been open. And, you know, got some balls batted at the line of scrimmage. Unfortunately, timed, you know. Tyler Eifert's going to walk in the end zone, and the ball gets tipped, and he catches it, and then we get 4th and 1, and we run into a slaughter. So we had our opportunities. We just did not capitalize as a group, and that's something that great teams have to do. We have to find a way to make a big play here. Somebody's got to make a play, whether it's a go ball, whether it's a big run, or a catch, a broken tackle, or something. But we just didn't have any juice whatsoever in that game. And we had great opportunities to do something. We just never could get it done.
Is that the angriest or most frustrating thing of all?
Yeah, it is very frustrating, and I'm sure everybody's frustrated. You know, it, you know, people are going to air out their frustration in different ways. We just hope that people come to work Wednesday morning with a little chip, a little bit of edge, because we know we can play better. I still feel like we have a great offensive group in our in my room. You know, I think we're talented. I think our offensive line is solid. I think our receiving core is excellent. I think we have great tight ends, and I think we have backs to choose from, and I think our quarterback is a solid quarterback in the NFL. So for us to score 6 points anywhere against anybody is shocking, quite honestly, and it's something that we have to fight out of.
Well, was it a case of the other receivers, like Marvin and Sanu, they weren't they weren't available, or because they weren't winning their routes?
Well, they were available. You know, just Andy has a choice to throw to whoever he wants to on every play. You know, we don't tell him who to throw to, but we do say that if AJ's single, we'd like to work AJ from time to time. You know, Tyler had his opportunities. Jermaine had a couple opportunities. Marvin had a couple opportunities. So did Mo. I mean, they all had some opportunities. It's just we weren't finishing plays, whether it was the throw, whether the route was short, the angle coming out of the break was poor. Maybe they just covered the damn thing. Tight coverage. They just lodged a couple. Yeah, so we got pressured and had to scramble on a couple of them. So, you know, it's a combination of a lot of things. In the passing game, it's not so much we're not looking for them, it's just coverage either took us off of them or they played good defense.
I know a couple people, you use shocking about the game. A couple people used embarrassing in the locker room afterwards. Was it embarrassing?
Yeah, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. You know, you put a lot of work into your game plan, you put a lot of work into practice, and we have a very talented team. And for us to go out there and lay an egg like we did, it's not a good feeling. And hopefully it's motivation for us, more so than embarrassing. Hopefully it doesn't happen again, and it can't happen again, you know, to get where we want to get. You know, we can't have games like this. No matter who it's against, where it is, we can't perform like that as a group.
Does it ever shake your confidence when you have a game like that? Does it ever shake your confidence in you know, what you've been working with these guys for months? Does it,
You know, it doesn't. It just makes you want to work harder, you know. It's motivating for me. You know, I understand the type of guys we have. I know we're young and we're going to make some mistakes every now and then because of the youth that we have. But we just got to do a better job of coaching them up and getting them in a better place. And I know that we get Gio the ball out in space. We get Tyler the ball. We got Jermaine Gresham. We got A.J. Green. We just got to coach them up better and stay positive with them because, honestly, I'm going to be upbeat and positive. I'm not going to yell and scream and hoot and holler, because I think this team, the future is very, very bright for this offensive group,
And for us to take one game and hammer them and try to bring them down a few notches, I don't think is the way to go. I think we continue to be positive and bring them up because I think there's great things to come for this group, honestly.
After four games, where do you feel like Andy is?
2-2. 500. You know, that's where we are. We're 500 as a group, offensive group. We're probably 18th or 20th again. And we just got to figure out what we do well and continue to do it. And the problem is right now we're not doing anything exceptionally well. We're not throwing the ball exceptionally well. We're not running the ball exceptionally well. People say run the ball. Well, we run the ball more if we get more than 3 yards, you know what I mean? So we just got to do something good. You know, we're a jack of all trades, master of none right now. We have to master something, and we'll work to do that. I think we're good enough that we can be good and solid in the running game, and I think we're good enough to be very good in the passing game. We just got to go out and do it.
Was that a little bit surprising there that kind of came out of nowhere?
Well, like I said, you know, I'm sure he has some throws he wish he had back and maybe some reads, but it wasn't all him, you know. Believe me, it was a combination of a lot of things. So I'm not down on Andy whatsoever. Andy's still our quarterback, our leader, and Andy will be fine. You know, he's a very strong-minded guy, and he'll come through this. He'll fight through this. He's going to have to because we need him. But to put all the blame on him, people who play offense and watch that tape know that it wasn't all his fault. Now, he could have done better, no doubt, as good of everybody.
What do you think about it?
Do you believe in the old buzzword, you know, identity? Do you feel like you're still trying to get one? Do you feel like you got
one? Probably. Yeah, that's probably our biggest fault right now is we're still trying to get one. You know what I mean? We're working towards that, you know. I think we have to be balanced in what we do.
Is that what you'd like to be?
I don't think there's any doubt. I don't know if any team in the NFL right now is good enough to be, you know, we're just a running team. You know what I mean? It's not like that anymore. You know, you look around the league and teams are throwing it a hell of a lot more than they're running it, with maybe one exception or two. But we got to be able to do both effectively. In order to do that, we have to probably, you know, come up with a running game that we can feel comfortable with and our guys are comfortable with, and keep working it, and then you know, keep working with our passing game, because I think we have some weapons out there that are tough to deal with, and to just put them on a back burner and say, hey, we're going to run it 60 times this week is probably unrealistic. It is for me, but that's what people want to see. 3 yards in a cloud of dust, we can do that.
I mean, Danny,
what do you think of Danny's Andy's accuracy? I mean, that seems to be...
He missed some throws that he, you know, typically doesn't miss, you know. But they weren't easy throws. They weren't like they were balls right in front of them. They were deep out routes. They were double move comebacks and things of that nature. So they weren't easy throws. And, you know, our receivers can do a little bit to help them with their angles coming out of breaks and the timing of it. We can keep working on the timing, and he'll get better. There's no problem there.
Benny, his forte, supposed to be third and fourth and ones, in the last 2 weeks fumble and stifled.
Yeah, well, those were two, he didn't have much of a chance. I don't know if Larry Zonka combined with Adrian Peterson would have got those. You know, those were tough downs, and we got to do a better job as coordinators and to get us into better plays and better block plays. He didn't have much of a chance.
How was Andy today?
He's fine. We're all disappointed, you know. We're all sick about the way the outcome was, and scoring 6 points on the road. We had ample opportunities, good field position to punch the ball in there, and we got a ball that goes through this. You know, he slips out of the center's hands and runs, you know, crazy. We got Tyler Eifert wide open. He's going to catch it, walk into the end zone. The ball gets tipped by the guy's middle finger, and, you know, there's some unfortunate. It was just one of those days where, you know, they made the big plays and we didn't make any. And that's what football is now. The teams that can make a play every now and then are usually the ones that win. And then we're forced to try to come from behind and had to throw the ball. We threw the pick at the end and it's game over. So, but we were right there the whole time. We just never could get over the hump and make a play to, you know, get a lead and put pressure on them.
So your take, I mean, is this the proper defense of Andy Dalton? Is there a defense of what we saw from Andy Dalton on Sunday?
That game was a raging dumpster fire. Let's just cut the crap and call it what it is.
Yep.
It was a raging dumpster fire. It was the lake catching on fire. It was bad.
Yeah.
I mean, and off, I think for their third year of being together, to put together a performance like this is embarrassing. Andrew Whitworth called it embarrassing. By all means, every offensive player and coach should be embarrassed over that game. The running game. Who the hell knows what the running game is at this point?
There haven't really been a whole lot of opportunities to figure it out. I can tell you this. It's not explosive. You have 83, I think it was, carries so far this year between Geo and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. A total of two have gone for longer than 10 yards. That's it. 117.
Well, we had that early in the year last year, and we've had some of that with Cedric Benson in the past.
It's true.
I think the fact that they aren't sticking to the run game, even though they got a change of pace guy in Giovanni Bernard, I think that the first drive, they had a good mixture moving both of those guys in there. Drove to, like, the Cleveland 39 or something.
Yeah.
And then punted it, and then Cleveland took it 95 yards down the field.
The problem was in the second half, they got away from it. In a game that you didn't really need to, with it being within a score up until about 6 minutes left. And that's the thing. Who do we fault here? Because the plays being called are passes, and is Jay Gruden, was he too pass happy, or was that the right call against a Cleveland run defense that's amongst the best in the NFL and was shutting down most everything that they were trying to throw at him? Isn't that why you're supposed to have all these weapons in the passing game? Is because when you are getting stopped in the run, you can go and sell out to the pass.
I almost think after that 4th-and-1, he totally lost confidence in his run game.
Yeah.
And it seemed to be that way, where things heavily skewed pass. And on a day when Andy Dalton was not accurate, I mean, hell, there were a lot of those passes where receivers had some mad hops to go up and get them. I mean, that one Jermaine Gresham down the middle of the field in the fourth quarter, he looked like he was about to alley-oop and slam the ball with how high he went to get it. Damn near caused him a concussion.
Yeah, we saw, I mean, he was sailing balls all day. Not a single, I mean, so many open guys. We saw A.J. Green, as frustrated as we've seen him after the game, even during the game points, you could just see it. Just, he was working so hard in a tough battle against Joe Hayden. And when
Usually against Hayden, he's good to break at least one long one. It'll be the classic 15-round fight where for 14, it's toe-to-toe and bloody, and then AJ will be able to get a jab or a punch in there and get a long gain. That did not happen.
It didn't happen because when AJ did make the moves to make it happen, Andy couldn't hit him. Those were open. There were plays there, a couple of them in particular, over the top where the plays were there, and Andy was just so far off target that it didn't really have a chance.
Well, look at it this way. I think the past 3 weeks, only one reception of plus 20 yards by A.J. Green. In three weeks, one plus 20 reception, which was 20 on the dot because he beat Sam Shields in single coverage, mm-hmm. to score a touchdown against Green Bay, a Pro Bowl receiver like A.J. Green, where, granted, there are going to be games, and we saw it San Diego last year, where he might have to be a possession receiver at times. Not for three frickin' weeks.
No, not for 3 weeks. And the problem is, it's not for lack of opportunity. He has had 38 targets in the last 3 weeks, and only he's catching far under 50% of those. Go check out the blog on Cincinnati.com that was up on Monday about Green and Dalton and the connection. Some of the numbers up there they're kind of mind-blowing when you look at it in comparison to what it's been the last 3 years. It was the worst three-game stretch for him as far as catch percentage. I mean, this is the guy that catches everything.
We're average yards per catch, too. I think it's down
2 yards. If you look at it, it's down about 2 yards from where he was last year and the year before. He's at like 11.5 per clip. That's including the Chicago game this year.
Right. Averaged 18 the first game, and yep. I think it's been 8 or 9 since then.
Yeah, nothing like that. And when you see A.J. Green unable to get involved and Andy Dalton unable to hit anything, there's only one thing I can think of, and it's 4 non-blondes. You know what I love about that song? When it plays out, there's these background singers in that song that they only say a few of the words. They just barely put in the wake, morning, step outside, take deep breath, get real high, scream, going on. And they do that the whole way. It's absolutely classic. One of my absolute favorites. But
Linda Perry, underestimated songwriter, by the way.
I mean, they you know what? They're on the one-hit wonder list, though. That Four Non-Blondes never quite turned out that second hit. But that first one, by God, if it isn't catchy. And it pretty much is the theme song of the Bengals offense at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And absolutely. The Barley House.
Yes.
the Barley House and the Bengals offense together again. So we've kind of got into whose fault is this? Where do you go from here? The bottom line is there is no time to waste because it's Patriots and the hoodie is coming to town right now. And when the hoodie comes to town, I think it's going to sound a bit like this on Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, for him to kind of emerge as how he has over the years is one of the more incredible things than the Bill Belichick I got to see during the early 90s in Cleveland.
Yeah, you've got Belichick history.
Yeah.
You know Belichick from way back in the Cleveland days.
Two stints, Cleveland and then... when he was with the Jets, coming back with Parcells.
Any good Belichick stories?
There are a couple. Belichick's introductory press conference in Cleveland, the former great Akron Beacon Journal football writer Ed Meyer mm-hmm. sees Bill and his wife Debbie Belichick walk into the room where Debbie was in a bright red dress, and Ed Meyer looked at a couple people and went, "I like this guy already." And then Ed Meyer and Bill Belichick proceeded to just openly fight for the next 4 years. there's also among the Cleveland press corps the infamous story of there was 1 year the Giants and Browns did a joint practice in New Jersey, and one of the writers. One of the writers one time got up on a table and screamed, "I predict Bill Belichick will be an abject failure," where then everybody ran to the dictionary to look up abject. I mean, those you look at the talent that those Belichick staffs turned out. It is rather incredible. And Michael Lombardi, who's Cleveland's GM now, mm-hmm. was a big fan of Brian Hoyer during the New England days, and now Hoyer leads Cleveland to a win, and wasn't spectacular, but solid enough, managed a game, and got the win.
Yeah, and now you're 2-2, and facing the possibility of 2-3. The good news is, the AFC North is really its own own. It's not even not a dumpster fire. It's its own little trash fire. You know, it's just it's like a few papers have kind of gotten a little.
Pittsburgh is 0-4 and only two games out.
They're full on. The building is burning down though over there. I mean, they go to London. How long of a flight back from London was that for Mike Tomlin and company? Oh. Just got to be brutal for them.
Do you think they did the B.A. Baracus thing with him where you just pop a couple sedatives? So
I tell you what sleep. I'm not doing. Staying awake during that flight. That's a must. That's a must fall asleep. That's bring me the drink cart. Let me slam a few bourbon and diets and go to bed. Because the last thing I'm doing is staying away to see what's going on in the back of that flight. No, you know, Bengals – Browns, Ravens, all 2-2, a whole lot of mediocrity. You know, the Ravens go to Buffalo and can't pull out a win. I mean, that's a game that they should win.
And guess who goes to Buffalo in 2 weeks?
Right. They'll be the Bengals in the same predicament will be coming up here. You know, that's really, I think, where you kick yourself if you're the Bengals. This is now twice you've had this opportunity. Both of your losses have come with chances to separate yourself early on from the rest of the division. And you were the team that was bringing everybody back, that had so much continuity. You were the team that wasn't rebuilding or had to cut a bunch of guys and this, that, or the other. That was when you're supposed to take
advantage. Or weren't
going
with its 18th new regime in 12 years.
Absolutely. So you're sitting there saying, that was when you need to take advantage because they're going to get it together at some point, and then you'll see where the advantage truly lies. This was where you seem to have one, and it's, you know, it's been blown at this point. You can go and beat New England and get to 3-2 and hope, but you had plenty of opportunity to separate yourself.
Yeah, but the bad thing is also it doesn't get easier. After this, you go to Buffalo. You go to Detroit.
Four or five on the road.
Yeah, the Jets.
Where you're 0-2 at this point.
Yeah, where last year this team was 6-2 on the road. It was 5-3 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And by the way, a little meaningless overlooked stat here. Throughout the last 3 years, they've had winless Octobers.
Yeah, let's not forget that. I think most Bengals fans will remember the winless October of 2010.
What a winless October of last year.
Well, I mean, the one of 10 started the ultimate spiral in recent Bengals history.
Yes.
The 10 in a row loss of the T.O. Chad debacle season.
Did Tank Johnson come to what moment?
Oh, yeah, exactly. So many bad things. That's the last thing. But that, you know, that year was the last year where there were expectations as high as they were this year. This is a different team. I don't think there's people out there that think that could happen to this group, but I'll tell you, games like Sunday make you think that maybe it could, because that's this team with too many weapons and too much talent to go out there and lay eggs like that.
Yeah, and I think that is the most disappointing thing at all, and I mean, we're all looking at the offense, but the defense gave up two touchdown drives of 90 yards or more, which...
Oh, my.
I think I've gone back to 1985, and I still can't see the last time a Bengals team's done that.
Let me just say, before we started this podcast, I had to pull Joe away from the computer. He was looking at old game books, which were the stats and the drive sheets were literally written in pen, and they've been copied for records attempting to track down this stat. I mean, at what point does it end? I saw some typewriter. I mean, you are really digging to try and track this stat down. I mean, it's a very viable stat, but man, I am in awe of your research. I mean, at what point would carrier pigeon will have to deliver the old game books into us to take a look?
Well, PJ Combs of Bengals Public Relations does have the folders in there, and you know, since we got to get up at the crack of dawn for Bill Belichick Wednesday morning, that might be time for me to start going through the books again.
What are the chances that our conference call with Bill Belichick lasts longer than 5 minutes?
Bill's pretty good. If you get him to talk about PB and certain things, Kembrell Tompkins.
Yeah, that's very interesting story this week with the former UC player who was the only person in the Sunday Night Football, you know, their little open where they say where they're from, to not use his college. He used his high school. So possibly, I didn't know there was some sort of tension there with maybe with Butch Jones or with UC. Very, very odd. I want to talk to Kembrell about that if we get the chance to.
Well, you got the number of New England PR since he won't be available on a conference call.
We'll track him down. We'll be talking to Bill Belichick. Well, obviously, we have plenty on the Patriots this week. Well, I mean, so Brady comes in here now, and this defense played pretty well against Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers. There's a difference in the two. I think you talked about Green Bay and their weapons. It was more about how many great players he has to go to. This is much more about the Brady show because he's still trying to figure out what the heck he has at receiver. Will we or will we not see Gronk, which a week after Jordan Cameron tore these guys up, that's a big decision to see how that breaks.
Vince Wilfork's probably done for the year with them. This is a 4-0 team where you kind of go, wow, they're 4-0? Really?
But they just went into Atlanta and won. I mean, that's a good Atlanta team.
Nearly blew that game, though, until basically Belichick put two people on Tony Gonzalez and said, punish him.
Yes. And you may be seeing a similar strategy on A.J. Green on Sunday, too, if they just choose to go that way. I feel like you look at this team as beatable, even though they're 4-0, like you said. But, man, Brady just keeps finding a way. I feel like this defense can slow Tom Brady enough. But again, the onus is going to fall onto this offense because it's going to have to be like the Green Bay win. You're not going to beat New England 13-10.
Yeah, and I think the thing that jumps out is in week 2 or week 3, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, those guys picked up and delivered. Where Gresham and Eifert continue to be solid again, but when you look at it, Sanu targeted 6 times, 3 receptions, 19 yards. We kind of overlook the pass interference penalty that he drew, which was big, and then they had the 4th-and-1 and couldn't convert. Marvin Jones targeted 3 times, deep, no receptions. Mm-hmm. You know, Gio.
If you look at their drives, those long drives we've talked about they've made, when they've been at their best, the ball has spread to everybody. Yep. Those long drives have not been AJ, AJ, AJ. No, they have been, the majority of those have all been when 4, 5, 6 guys are involved, the ball is spreading around. And perhaps that should be the lesson to a team that the last 3 weeks has thrown it 38 times at AJ Green. Maybe it's time to start being a little more selective in when it goes there. And you hate to see or even mention the fact that a game plan would be to throw it to A.J. Green more, but should it be to get more involved and be a little bit more discriminating on when you just try and force it in there to him?
But remember that question I asked Jay after week 1 and now it's borne out again? When I asked him, granted, A.J. had 9 receptions in that Chicago game. But he was targeted 15 or 16 times in that game where I kind of said, was that by design? Was that by what they were giving you? Or are you concerned that he was targeted that many times? And it's like, no, kind of olayed in and out of it. But now these last 3 weeks, too, I mean, it shows that they're passing a heck of a lot more.
Yeah.
But
you heard Jay recognize that when he talked today that – hey, maybe sometimes we do need to be, even though you always want to go to that, if you have the matchup you think there, you always want to shove it in no matter how covered he looks like he is, maybe sometimes that needs to be looking elsewhere to keep other guys more involved.
Yeah, and I think the first 2 games, Gresham and Eifert, or as Mo Egger would call him, Greifert, did very well. You know, Sanu and Jones at times had good games. I think this offense is deep enough that if A.J. struggles, you can have other guys pick it up. The run game, I mean, concerns me. I mean, it didn't matter who ran the ball yesterday. You were going to have problems. Green Ellis not getting it done in short yardage via a combination of blocking and stuff, is a huge thing that jumps out to me. It's the rest of this offense has to pick up. Dalton has to get more consistent. I mean, you look at the game against Chicago, two bad interceptions. Pittsburgh played okay but was erratic the first half. Last week against Green Bay, a couple of those turnovers were on him. Cleveland, both turnovers were on him. And he had a bad interception run early last season. I think eight straight games thrown a pick. So you can't just keep futzing around with games early in the season and then expect to turn it on the second half.
The problem is you can look back, oh yeah, there was the run at the beginning of last season, turned around and had some good games. The problem is you're not seeing him progressing.
Yeah.
You're not seeing a guy who appears to have moved forward, which we thought maybe we had seen after that first week in Chicago, but then it comes back and it's that up and down lull where he has good runs of 3-4 games even, like we saw last year at times, or sometimes in his rookie year where he plays really well, but then you get these on the flip side that make you wonder if this is who Andy Dalton is and will be, if we have seen the ceiling.
Yeah.
For Andy Dalton.
I mean, you get one a year, you don't want to see it. It's like, okay, he's going to have this one game a year. You get another game like this during the season,
and the question mark is a whole lot bigger.
The question mark's really big right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the amount of email and angst I got after this game in 5-6 years on the beat is worse than what I've ever seen it, just from people.
Yeah. We ask that you step back from the ledge, my friends.
Yes.
Try to remember it's week four, and as Andrew Whitworth said, even while going off about how embarrassed he was over everything, you know what, these games happen, and perhaps this will be something that drives this offense and as a bit of a motivator going forward. But you know what, we'll find out. Bill Belichick, I can guarantee you, has a pretty darn good game plan prepared to try and slow down the offense and do what Cleveland just did last week. So I think a pretty big game coming up here in week five to see exactly where this team stands. Particularly, it'll be interesting every time any Dalton on the offense comes on. Joe, it's been fun.
Yep, but you know what, Paul? Since it's the end of September.
It is the end of September.
First quarter of the season's over. Go out with a little bit of Green Day.
Green Day?
Well, wake me up when September ends.
Well, somebody does need to wake up, so we'll leave that for the offense.
The offense needs to wake up and stuff, and, you know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. So, hey, make sure you keep checking out the blog. Make sure you keep checking out Beyond the Stripes on Tuesday nights, every Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Of course, Josh Johnson there this Tuesday.
Beyond the Stripes minus Paul Daugherty.
Without Paul Daugherty this week, yes. But we'll be
you,
back.
Linz.
Full crew will be there. And, of course, we'll have all your coverage coming up on Stay.com this weekend with New England. Hoodie coming to town, so keep an eye on that, and we will obviously see you every Tuesday as well on this podcast. Keep checking it out, and we'll keep posting for you. So hey, we'll see you next week.
Have a good night, everybody.
Pain again, becoming who we are, as my memory rests, but never forgets what I lost. Wake me up when September ends. Me up when The innocent can never last. Wake me up when September ends. Like my father's come to pass.